We're now going to speak with Sarah Crowe from Yarra Yering, who has just taken out Winery of the Year for a second time in 4 years. Sarah, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Now, Hugh and Hook just gave you a fair rap, so you've got big shoes to try and fill out as we have a chat. Congratulations first.
Thank you so much. Yeah, we're really pleased.
It must mean a lot to you and the team. I mean, gee, it would be pretty hard to convince people to try your wines at Sell It All when it's got the tag of Winery of the Year.
Yeah, it is. And I think, you know, of all the awards that kind of go around the wine industry, for me, the Winery of the Year is the kind of most satisfying one, because it really does mean consistency, you know, across all of your wines, your varieties, your styles. You know, it's not just congratulations, you did well with one wine this year, but it's, you know, the whole portfolio has been judged really well. And so I think that just gives consumers that confidence in our brand.
Mm-hmm. Most definitely. And I think it's probably why, you know, it's why you have such a strong members list. And of course, to be a member, you have to be invited to that, because it's not just something you can buy your way onto, right?
No, that's right. Yeah, we don't. We have kind of a limited number of members, and that kind of is kept for kind of those who are loyal to us and return customers and you know, love the brand, you know, in an ongoing fashion.
Yes, and Jill, you go.
Oh, no, I was actually just going to, so firstly, as Simon mentioned, you got a pretty good rap from Hewan, but something he did mention is that since you've actually started at Yarra Yering, it's actually really, it's gone from strength to strength. That's very much a whole team thing, and I know you do have that approach, that's wonderful, but what else is it that that under your guidance and tutelage, Yarra Yering's improved so much?
Well, I think our biggest asset is our vineyard our location here in the Yarra Valley. I think if you look at the results in the last few years, three of the four top wineries, I know we had it twice, but including Oak Ridge, have been the top wineries. So, you know, it's a wonderful place to grow grapes, but then our site here is just like super special, and that is our single biggest asset that we have. But then I would say that the people and personnel would be number two to that. And just the way that everybody kind of pitches in and cares about the vineyard and this place and honouring you from Dr. Harris, and, you know, but also having an eye on the future, which is, you know, well, that is all wonderful and we've got this great history, but, you know, is it too much to think that we could maybe even improve on that? And so everybody kind of has that approach to their job here, which is awesome.
That same goal to achieve. So just very quickly on future, Hewan would like to ask you if we're going to see a Cab Franc amongst your stable.
No.
I think he really wants one.
No, Jill, he wanted the Cab Franc included in the dry red number one, or in the blend.
Good. That's
Okay. Well,
because he said down the road at Mount Mary, you know, they use Cab Franc.
Well, and at Yeringberg.
He was giving comparisons.
And, yeah. Those, you know, Yeringberg and Mount Mary, you know, they are who I look at to kind of see how we're going each year. They make beautiful wines, both of those, beautiful Cabernet blends. And, yeah, they both use Cabernet Franc. But this is it's supposed to be a secret. You always let the cat out of the bag. we have actually planted a small amount of Cabernet Franc because, you know, always trying to think about how we do improve on what's gone before us is, well, could a little bit of Cabernet Franc enhance this blend even more? The only way to find out is to plant some. And so, we will have a crop in probably 3 years' time.
Well, there you go. You heard it first on the Wine Show Australia. Sorry. What do you think? I mean, there's obviously a reason why you haven't done it to date and why you will now. How much is it going to change the wine? What are you hoping to see?
Well, I mean, it might. And Dr. Caritas actually did have Cabernet Franc here in the early years, and I'm told he called it rusty tank water and never the blend. Ouch. So, you know, we've got a long way to go from Rusty Tank Water to it making the dry red wine number one blend. Look, for me, it's really, it wouldn't be a big amount necessarily, and it's just if it can bring that extra kind of
little X factor,
another layer, you know.
Yeah.
We often talk about 1%ers in this industry, and maybe it doesn't. Maybe it doesn't enhance it, and it never makes that blend, but it could. And what if it does? And what if the wine can be have that extra layer and element that adds to the intrigue?
Oh, look, and if you never try it, you'll never know. So I guess the dry red wine number one is still pretty happy with the way you're making it. I think he actually mentions three specific wines that really put you at the number one, and that was the dry red wine number one Cab Blend, the 22 Chardonnay, and your Caritas Cab Sav 21, which got 99 points, which is like unheard of.
Yeah, it's amazing. You know, 99 points. It's you know, close to perfect, which is what.
What did your winemakers
are trying to? I might have bottled it one day too late or something. I don't know.
Yeah,
it is.
Waiting on that day, I was going to pick it. And
yeah, we're always striving for perfection, and we have to aim there. And if we get close, then you know, we're usually pretty happy. But, yeah, we're so well known for Cabernet and two of those wines. Well, the Caritas is a straight Cabernet Sauvignon, but the number one is a Cabernet dominant blend. And everybody thinks of us as a red wine producer. And so I was just so thrilled when Ewan called me the other day and was talking to me about the Chardonnay, because even though it's a small production, Chardonnay and Pinot for us, really small, and they sell out, but particularly the Chardonnay, I've really been thinking very deeply about that Chardonnay we've been making since I've been here. And so to have, you know, Ewan give it 98 points and to want to talk about it, I'm like, finally, someone's asking me about the Chardonnay.
We don't just produce reds here.
There's progress right there, Sarah.
Absolutely.
yes, it's... look, it's such a great thing, and you can obviously, you know, trade off that very well. It means, you know, more people will come to Cellador to try these wines, and, you know, certainly the, you know, the ones you've got there. One thing that I ask you, and I keep forgetting the actual answer, but I try to tell the story. Can you just really quickly run us through the different – so Dr. Caritas named the blocks after – battles in was it World War II?
It's, well, the original 30 acres is pretty simple. It's what to, and that's really where the dry red wine number two naming foundation was. Those grapes came from those blocks. In 1990, he bought the neighbouring property and so doubled his vineyard holdings, and it's all of the blocks on that vineyard expansion. I guess he didn't want to keep going with 3, 4, 5, but they are all named after battles that the French lost to the British. And some people find that entertaining, and some people get really a little bit offended by it.
Offended.
If they're French. So if people ask, I'll tell them the story, but often it's like, Agincourt, isn't that? And it's like, yep.
So it's a quirky thing for you as part of your history, right? And I love that. I get it that, you know, you've got to read the room with your bringing that one up. But anyway,
I think it speaks to Dr. Caritas and the kind of person that he was. You know, for instance, he didn't sit in his lounge room and watch television at the end of the day. He sat and he had a particular interest in the history of wars, and was quite across those battles and had a personal kind of interest in them. And so, yeah, this was his vineyard, so he could name those blocks. You know, it's good. Sometimes it's hard to come up with new names for blocks and wines and things like that. So, yeah, it worked for him.
There's a theme, yeah. We've got a text line here that our listeners can... can text in. And Christopher asks about, so making the point that after incredible reviews for the 21s, how do the 22s and 23s compare? And second part is, are there any past vintages to look at that reflect in a similar way to the 22 and 23?
Okay, lots of questions there.
Yes,
thank
sorry.
You. I think I actually really love the 22 wines. They have a wonderful kind of fruit concentration to them. I think it's a very nice start to the review. So Hewan and the team have given the Chardonnay and Pinot both 98 points from 2022, which was part of this award. And so that gives me great confidence that we're about to release the 22 dry reds in May. So it gives me a lot of confidence that those wines are going to be well received as well. We have had their high rainfall years for us, 22 up until today, for instance. The Yarra Valley is a high rainfall region. The last 4 years we've had here average of about 920 millimetres a year, which is a lot to deal with for our vineyard manager throughout the growing season. And then, so they were kind of cooler years, lower set, because when we have rain, flowering is a little bit compromised, so the yields, the volumes aren't particularly large on 22-23. And 23 was a lot tougher than 22. It was even cooler, and we had to be really patient because we didn't have much of a summer that year. And then 24 that's fermenting away this morning is actually also looking really, really good. Once again, we've just had to be patient. And it hasn't been a very rushed season for us because we have loads of different varieties here. It's kind of crazy for the one little vineyard to have Chardonnay, Pinot, Shiraz, Cabernet and all the associated varieties, and then into some Portuguese varieties. So, yeah, our harvest is quite stretched out.
In a good way, really, I suppose, isn't it? Rather than the huge, pardon the pun, crash of everything coming in together, yeah.
Yeah, the compressed seasons are not much fun to make, whereas these seasons where we've got time and there's little gaps between the varieties, so, you know, we're not rushed in the winery, we've got time to think about things and really, you know, more precise with our picking decisions, because it's not all ready at the same time. It's like, you know what, that needs another 2 days, let's just push it out.
Yeah. Jill, did you have any other questions for Sarah? No, not
specifically. No, it's just looking forward to seeing this little bit of Cap Franc appearing. And actually, I do have one. I do have one because I've got to ask. I'm a very avid Cap Franc fan. If this does go well, this new planting, would you consider growing a mono varietal?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, nothing's off the table, and I think that having that. That approach to the vineyard, which is actually what has happened in our since 1969. There's been a lot of varieties that have come and gone, or they've been replanted and been just, you know, going, okay, well, that's not actually working to the level that we would like it to. Let's either try it somewhere else, take it out, put in something else that we are more confident. And so this evolution of the vineyard is a wonderful thing, and we will continue to try and, you know, expand our horizons and do things better and have them in better spots on the vineyard, etc.
Well, good to hear.
Yes, exactly. Sarah, thank you. You're always available to us. Thank you for being so. And, hey, well done again. And
thank you, guys. Yeah, have a great Sunday.
Congrats to the team and everyone. I'm sure they've got a spring in their step, hey?
Absolutely. I'll pass that on. Cheers.
Thank you, Sarah.